This episode is brought to you by Hot Dish Productions, an award-winning modern culinary production company. Learn more at hotdishproductions.com. This week on Meat and Three, we dedicate our stories to elders, grandparents, and family members who came before us.
Some people called on the phone. What time is your appointment? Mine's 2:45. Our friend, the dentist, he was 3:30. And it was like a social event.
It's a small island. A lot of them I knew when I was a kid. So it was, you know, to really help them feel like they weren't alone.
It's partly this communal nature of food. And so it can operate as a bridge, not just between neighbors and friends, but also between the living and the dead.
Listen to Meat and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, and welcome to the Feed Feed podcast. I'm Julie Resnick, co-founder of The Actual Feed Feed, the world's largest social native food publication and community, serving as your daily source for what to cook, bake, eat, and drink. Throughout season 4 of the Feed Feed podcast, I will be trying to help you solve the question that we are all faced with on a daily basis, now more than ever, what's for dinner? Each week, I will be speaking with a Feed Feed community member whose recipes are a constant source of ideas and inspiration and help me get dinner on my table nearly 365 days a year. Today, I'm joined by Alice Choi from Hip Foodie Mom, a food blogger and video creator who focuses on easy-to-follow weeknight recipes that lean into Asian and Korean food. Alice's recipes and videos have been seen in Better Homes and Gardens, The Kitchen, The Feed Feed, Today Food, People Magazine, and more. Alice lives in the Philadelphia area with her husband and two daughters. Welcome to the Feed Feed podcast, Alice.
Hi, Julie. Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, it's so great to chat with you. How's everything going in Philadelphia? Is it warming up?
It is warming up. Things are going really well right now. We actually recently just moved into a new house.
Yeah, I've been following your home, your long home renovation on Instagram. Congratulations. It seems like you have your kitchen and your furniture. How does that feel?
It feels great because honestly, after 2020, it's so nice to be in a larger space. We were in an apartment temporarily, and you know, because of COVID, what we thought was going to be like an 8-month home build turned into a year and a half.
Oh my gosh!
So I'm extremely like grateful and appreciative, and so happy to be in the new house. And I'm in a larger kitchen. I'm back to having a gas range, which I'm beyond excited and so happy.
That's great. Awesome. So I want to start out today kind of going a little bit back in time. Would love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about your childhood. I know that food has always been really central in your family, both when you were a child and also, you know, with your two kids that you're raising now. Tell us what it was like growing up in your family. Who cooked? How involved in the kitchen were you? Did you always eat Korean food, or what were some of your favorite meals as a child?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas. And my parents immigrated from Seoul, South Korea. They actually met here in the States. They met in Chicago.
Okay.
My dad moved to Texas to get his master's in journalism at East Texas State University. So that's what took them to Texas. But growing up, food was a huge part of our lives. Food and cooking. And my father is actually a great cook. So is my mother. So growing up, I saw both of them in the kitchen, which was really nice for me to see.
Yep. And did they cook together, or was it sort of like you make dinner tonight and I'll make it tomorrow?
It was a little bit of both. Like yeah. Sundays were kind of our day as a family to get together and eat. And some days my dad would cook, some days my mom would cook. And then some days, we would all be in there together doing something. And, it was just really nice. Like I always say this, but some families connect and bond over sports or, you know, they do activities together. For my family growing up, we came together as a family and we bonded in the kitchen and around the dinner table. And that's where we always gathered there and just, you know, broke bread together. And, growing up, my parents worked a lot.
So what, did your dad become a journalist after journalism school?
No. So back then, I mean, as you can imagine, it was really hard for him to find a job in journalism, you know, as a Korean.
Yep.
And so he kind of did what he had to do to, you know, survive and to, you know, feed his family. So, and you know what, I still, to this day, I don't know the full story as to how he started his business, but my dad, opened up a very, very small, Korean market. And this was when I actually wasn't even born yet. My brother was a baby and my mother was a nurse and, she had to quit her job and help my father. And, you know, I think this is a story that, that many immigrant families face. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of have to put aside, their dream and maybe yeah. something that they, you know, studied, and they just kind of have to do, they have to find something that they kind of have to do to survive. So my dad opened up a small market. And then from there he opened up, restaurants.
Oh, so, cool. Okay.
Yeah. Korean restaurants, Japanese. And then he moved into sushi. So into Japanese restaurants. So over the course of my childhood, my father, I think at one point he had three restaurants, kind of like a hibachi style, you know, cook on the table, yeah. Japanese type restaurant, an all you can eat sushi buffet restaurant and a Korean restaurant. And so, yeah, so food has always been, at the center of my family growing up, at the center of our lives. And it was just very important for my parents to, I guess for us to gather together as a family around food.
Yep.
And growing up, I remember my mother, it was really important for her to pass on Korean food recipes to me and my sister. Mm-hmm. It's funny, like my brother was a really good cook as well, but she was just like dragging me and my sister into the kitchen. Cause this is kind of old school, but her mentality back then was, well, you need to learn how to cook Korean food so you can, marry and find a nice Korean boy, you know, right. and be able to cook for him.
Right.
But at the time I had no interest, of being in the kitchen. I loved Korean food, but I had no interest in learning how to make it. So it wasn't until a little bit later in life that I really kind of found my passion for cooking. And, now that I have children, now I understand why my mother did that and why yeah. she wanted to pass on, Korean food recipes to me.
And what were some of those recipes? And do you make them now? And can we find
I
them
do.
On the blog? Okay.
Yes, yes. So lots of soups and lots of stews, like kimchi fried rice, yeah. Kimchi, bulgogi, which is Korean marinated beef ribeye.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all the basics. There's like a soft tofu dish, sundubu jjigae. a soft tofu stew. And my husband, who, so I did end up marrying a nice Korean boy and he loves green food. But it's funny because when I was younger, I had moved to San Francisco. This was kind of like my first time out of Texas and first time on my own. And my mother had packed me, she packed these three Korean cookbooks in my boxes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that she had done this. And so when I was unpacking, I found them. And they were probably the only three Korean cookbooks that were printed in English at the time.
Right.
And right. Yeah. And so, you know, that was kind of her way of saying, you know,
don't forget, you gotta keep cooking. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. So, now that I have children, I really want them to know how to cook Korean food, and I, you know, want them to appreciate their heritage and appreciate who they are and, you know, our background and the cuisine that comes with, you know, being Korean.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, right now more than ever, it's super important to me as a Korean American, you know, as a member of the AAPI community, you know, just to embrace even more who I am, you know, the foods that we eat, and really, you know, teach that to my children, and you know, and then hopefully see them cook, you know, teaching it to their children, you know, in the future. So, yeah.
I mean, and you've always had your kids in the kitchen. I mean, I've obviously followed you on Instagram for years now and seen them, you know, alongside you cooking. And so, you know, as they're getting older and probably aware, I mean, how aware are they of sort of what's going on? How are you talking to your kids about what's happening right now in the world?
Yeah. No, thank you for asking that. I have spoken to them about everything that's going on right now, and I have chosen my words very carefully.
Yep.
But I have also spoken to them truthfully to let them know all of the Asian hate that's going on right now, and these just terrible attacks on elderly Asian people. I lightly told them what happened in Atlanta. But no, we have had a conversation about it, and their spring break was last week, and I was going to take them to DC for a couple of days, just the three of us.
Yeah.
But we ended up not going because honestly, I was scared. I didn't know what would happen.
Yeah.
You know, it was just going to be me and my two daughters. And so they said, well, why aren't we going? And then I kind of had to remind them, you know, well, this is what's going on. And, I don't think I would feel safe. Yeah. So one day, so we ended up staying home for the week, and one day I wanted to take them to the mall, and before we went I said to my kids, you know, because at the mall these days, you know, there's just a bunch of teenagers, and you know, who knows what would be said to us, or you
correct,
know whatnot
right.
So I just wanted to prepare
in case something
exactly
happened.
Yeah. So I prepped them, and I said, hey, we're going to go, and we're not going to be afraid, but don't be surprised if somebody says something to us, just be prepared. And I said, if I'm not with you for whatever reason, like if we're in a store and we're looking around and if somebody says something to you, come tell me, you know, come get me.
Right.
And you know, that makes me like, it makes me very sad that, you know, this is the reality of our world right now. But all I can do is just, you know, hope and pray that for change, like a little bit every day, and just, you know, more awareness, I think helps. But yeah, I think definitely the conversation with my children had to be had. And they're actually still home right now, going to school virtually.
Yep.
Our school district kind of switched from hybrid, going back 4 days a week just recently. And I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to keep them at home because we kind of have a nice schedule right now.
Yeah.
And it's already April. And
I know.
There's only like, you know,
two months
left of school. But then after all this happened, like kind of deep inside, I thought to myself, well, I'm kind of glad that they're at home because, you know, who knows what, you know, snide yeah, remarks or right. what would happen to them at school. And so, yeah, so it's hard and it's, I don't know, when I stop to think and when I look at like the news or if I look at social media and if I see another attack or it just like it infuriates me, you know, and then it saddens me and then it's just, but it's hard.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's awful. But you know, it sounds like you're taking the right approach with the kids and, you know, but I'm sorry. I hope everything was okay when you went to the mall and you guys had a nice day and had some fun shopping.
Yeah. And it's, I think the, you know, if I could share like a bright side to all of this is that, I am glad to see, you know, a lot of people in the AAPI community, you know, speaking out and standing up and being more bold. And, this has also caused me to be more vocal, about how much I, am proud of my heritage and, yeah. and then, you know, reinforcing that with my children. So,
yeah.
So if anything, I think that's been the positive thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we're obviously at a moment in time right now where, you know, there are, you know, very opposite extremes, but hopefully through, you know, your platform and really through food and educating people through food, you know, it's just, it's some, you know, everyone loves to eat. Everyone likes to get together with their friends and family. And, you know, it something that we actually started as a family at the beginning of COVID and have continued is, you know, we're not going out to restaurants like we were, you know. And so with my kids, I said, pick a country. Let's do some research. Let's listen to the music. And, you know, sometimes they're like, Mom, this is so, like, I don't want to do this. But I'm like, no, we're going to put on, you know, pop music from this country. We're going to listen to it. We're going to, you know, get some interesting ingredients. We're going to cook some of their food. We're going to talk about, you know, their special dishes. And I think that, you know, it's one way that we can educate our kids is through food and saying, you know, everyone loves food and we can bring people together and hopefully break down the barriers, at least, you know, when our kids grow up and become young adults.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, Julie. And I love that you're doing that with your family. And I think that's a great idea. And I should start doing that with my family as well.
No, you know, it's kind of fun. It's fun. You know, you can also like, I mean, I've been doing like, I let them order some fun decorations on Amazon, you know, and it's like just a few things to kind of mix it up over this past year. You know, that was one of the things that I said, you know, we're going to do that. And it's been great.
I love that.
And they, you know, it expands their palate too.
Absolutely.
You know, and they taste flavors that they haven't tasted before. And, you know, and then when they do go out, in the future, I mean, we've started going to a few. We're in Los Angeles, so we're able to go to outdoor restaurants and, you know, takeout is amazing here. But, you know, they've noticed, they've picked up like, oh, this Indian spice is the same that we made when you made that chicken dish, you know, or when we made that naan.
That's great.
Which is great. So, yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about Hip Foodie Mom. Is it, I was looking it up. Alice, has it almost been 10 years?
It's been, so I know I actually had to go back and kind of track down my first post. And, I'm just going to say that I started it in 2013.
Okay.
So,
not quite, but that's a long time. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I had started it maybe a little bit before that, but prior to 2013, I think of it was more of just kind of a hobby, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was just you know, writing whatever and putting up recipes. And I think, you know, I don't even know how I was taking the photos back then, but in 2013, that's when I really, that is when I turned it more into a career. And that was what I was working with brands and partnerships. And yeah, so,
awesome.
That was kind of the beginning of all of that.
And I guess looking back, it would be interesting to know, like, what is one thing that you wish you had known back when you started it, you know, and, you know, here we are now, but what's one thing you wish you had known?
Oh my goodness.
About this, this life that you are encountering on.
that it's hard work.
Yeah.
I think for the people out there and for the people who are listening to this, who are food bloggers themselves or do something creatively in the food space, I mean, you know how much work it is. And I think for those on the outside looking in and, you know, they think it's so fun and cool and it is, and it can be, but it's a lot of hard work. And I think one of the important things to hold on to as you do this is just to kind of focus on what you're doing, focus on your content, making it better, keep challenging yourself to grow and learn and put things out there. And I think as much as you can, don't compare. Don't look around you. It's important to look at other people in the space who are doing it to support each other. But I think a lot of people kind of fall into that hole where they're kind of comparing themselves and looking at what the other person is doing. And then that, I think that just never kind of takes you to a good place.
Yeah.
So I think just staying focused, continually challenging yourself with your content, and it's been crazy, just, you know, for just over the past few years with social media. And
yeah, and, I mean, you're on Instagram, you know, you're on TikTok, you're yeah. Are you on YouTube as well? I'm assuming. Yes,
I am. I'm not as active on YouTube. I just kind of use YouTube as a kind of a video repository, or, you know, it's just somewhere where I kind of house my videos.
Yeah.
But I am the most active on Instagram and more recently TikTok, which is a funny story because I don't know how old your kids are, but my 10-year-old and my 13-year-old, they taught me how to use TikTok. You know, last year, you know, when we were all at home, and you know, it just kind of started out as this fun thing to do.
Yep.
And you know, we kind of fell into all the TikTok trends and doing like the fun or attempting to do the fun dances and then cooking the viral recipes on there.
Right.
And I think it's a really great space. It's fun. I mean, it's, I think you shouldn't spend too much time on TikTok, but I think in general, it's a fun, definitely a fun app. And the rate that it's grown is crazy. I mean,
it's crazy, right?
People might be on TikTok now more than they are on Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. My kids are 14, 13, and 9. And they were not so encouraging. They've always been, it's a funny thing, you know, they were always embarrassed. Like, oh, you guys have so many followers on Instagram and now my friends are following you. And when we told them that we were, actually we told them January of 2020, we said, we're going to launch a TikTok account. And they were like, no, you cannot do that. And I was like, I bet you that by the end of the year, we'll have 1 million followers on TikTok. And they were like, Mom, don't, please, I'm begging you. And it was funny. So, of course, we didn't listen to our children, thankfully. And I actually beat that, you know, bet. We're currently at 2.1 million followers on TikTok, which is
that's
crazy.
Incredible. Yeah.
I love it. I think it's really fun. And, you know, and actually I like how Instagram brought in Reels as, you know, a comparable product to TikTok and, you know, and you're able to, you know, put out content that's, you know, not so polished, you know, not so perfect, but it's real. And I think in this year in particular, that's what people want. It's like, I'm making salmon for dinner and here's how I'm making it. And you should make it too. It's sort of back to, I feel like, a little bit more of an authentic place, putting Instagram in more of like an authentic place and not everything having to be so polished.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And I think what's been so cool about TikTok and Reels and just video in general, I feel like creators are, you know, kind of like you said, they're being more authentic, and you're also seeing creators kind of becoming like storytellers.
Yep.
Which is really cool. And we're seeing a different side of people, and we're still seeing the food, but in a different way. So I think for sure, social media has enabled digital creators to just kind of have more fun and to challenge ourselves in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like you said before, it is hard, you know, and your content has to evolve and you have to be socially savvy and you have to be testing out new ideas and, you know, and you've always done such a good job of that over the years. I mean, I feel like you started video pretty early on, you know, when Instagram launched video. I mean, those of us who've been on it forever remember, you know, when it was just images. But, you know, you got into video pretty early. And also, you know, Instagram stories, you know, you've always been active there. So, you know, it's been nice, you know, to watch your content evolve over the years and capitalize on what's trending. So congratulations, because I know that's hard work.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you. And for me, I had to find the piece that I enjoyed, and I'm kind of focusing on my strengths. So I am not the best. You know, I'll be the first one to say it. I'm not the best food photographer, but I'm comfortable on video. You know, I'm a very visual person myself. And so I love watching other people cook. And I feel like when I see something happening, I feel like I retain it better.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So when video came out, I was like, okay, you know, let's do some on-camera videos. And so, that was something I enjoyed. That was something that I enjoyed putting out. And Instagram stories, I have my good days and my bad days, but definitely that's also something, that's probably what I enjoy the most about Instagram. reels and stories, because I really feel like that stories is really just me unedited, you know, behind the scenes. I'm at home.
Yeah.
You know, I'm showing you my dirty kitchen, you know, we're cooking together. And more recently I've also enjoyed, doing more Instagram lives just to have that, time to connect with people and talk about food and get in the kitchen together.
And there have been some great features that have come out with Live this past year. I love that the donate ability.
Yes.
I don't know if you've used that yet, but we do that on, that's sort of a rule that we've established, is that if we're going to go live, we need to choose the charity and or whoever, if we bring someone on and do like a split screen live, ask the person who they want us to collect donations on behalf of. And it's so seamless. It's like, you know, the money just passes directly from the person watching the live to the organization. So I really applaud Instagram for getting that up and running. And also the Q&A feature is really great too. For answering those fun questions and asking questions of the audience. So,
yeah, no, they've definitely, the way Instagram has evolved over the years, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Hot Dish Productions, an award-winning modern culinary production company specializing in creative digital video, photography, and podcast production. From concept through post-production, Hot Dish creates and produces compelling food stories that ignite the chef in all. Hot Dish Productions has deep connections to award-winning and celebrity chefs and over 20 years experience. Their team has won both a James Beard Award and an IACP Award for their work in food media. Hot Dish Productions delivers the highest quality product at a fair value. Let them help tell your culinary story today. Explore their work and learn more at hotdishproductions.com.
Okay, thanks, Alice. We're back, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you're back in your new home, you've got this awesome kitchen. Kind of take us into what your kitchen is like. We'd love to know, like, what ingredients do you, if I was to open up your pantry, what would I always find in there? And your fridge and maybe even your freezer. What are your staples that you really rely on?
In my pantry, I will always have a full spice rack. I love using spices, pasta, beans, jarred tomato sauces, lots of Asian food, pantry items like sesame oil, like hot chili peppers. In Korean food cooking, I use a lot of gochujang, Korean hot pepper paste, gochugaru, which is the ground peppers, hot peppers.
Yep.
Lots of rice. And then in the my philosophy with cooking is that I tell my readers that as long as you have a well-stocked pantry, you know, a good amount of produce and some form of protein,
you can
always throw something together.
Absolutely.
So in my pantry, I also chicken stock or beef stock or vegetable stock, but I always try to keep lots of fruits and vegetables, carrots, cucumbers, broccoli, onions, potatoes, and then we eat everything. So beef, chicken, pork, fish, all sorts of seafood. And I have a delivery service. So I feel like I always have lots of chicken and beef and salmon and shrimp in my freezer.
Yeah, that's great.
But I also love having like Korean dumplings in my freezer, mm-hmm. Different types of noodles that I keep in my freezer. What else do I have? I have, and I think I got this from my father, I have a really big sweet tooth, mm-hmm. which I have probably passed on to my kids. So I always have probably at least three types of ice cream, which is bad. I don't know if I should be saying this.
We do too. But... Oh my gosh. We have so much ice cream in our freezer. I totally hear you on that. What is your favorite flavor?
Well, so what's funny, Julie, is I try to buy pints because I feel like if they're smaller, if it's smaller, you don't feel as guilty.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We have like, you know, Haagen-Dazs and Ben and Jerry's and, mm-hmm. I love, is it their everything but the, is that
yeah.
theirs?
Yeah. Yeah. The Ben and Jerry's. Yeah.
Yes. And most recently, I just bought these Yasso bars, which if you haven't tried them, they're
no,
so
haven't.
Good. It's Greek yogurt dipped in chocolate. So it looks like the Haagen-Dazs ice cream bar.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But it's yogurt.
Yep.
And they're so good.
Definitely will try those.
And then the last thing that I always have in my freezer, I always have homemade cookie dough.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, if people don't do this at home, you absolutely need to do it. Whenever I make a cookie recipe, whether it be chocolate chip or peanut butter or whatever, I never bake all of it, you know, after I've made it.
Yeah.
I will only bake like maybe 6 or 8.
Yeah. Just what you're going to eat that day.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I freeze the rest of the cookie dough balls. And then that way, you know, you can bake a chocolate chip cookie whenever you want one.
Every night.
Yeah.
Turn it into an ice cream sandwich. So let's talk about some popular recipes on your blog. Are there any recipes that over the years have just continued to be, you know, fan favorites and people keep coming back to and making time and again?
Yes. My kimchi fried rice is very popular. I feel like that one is one that always does well. And I feel like once people discover kimchi and kind of their love for Korean food, mm-hmm. that's a recipe that does really well.
Yeah.
I have a steak marinade recipe that I feel like... every year around like Father's Day and like Labor Day, like it always does really well. I have a vegetarian lo mein that is very popular. I have a one pot beef stroganoff that is also really popular.
Yeah, I haven't made a beef stroganoff in a long time. My mom used to make that all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I actually also grew up in Dallas, so I didn't know that you grew up there.
I did.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I know. And so I guess back to the recipes on your blog, do you make a lot of these recipes at home, you know, time and again? And were these recipes that you kind of developed for the blog? Or were these recipes you were making for your family that you kind of perfected over time and then published for your readers?
So it was a little bit of both. So okay. I feel like when I really started the blog and I was serious about it and I was only doing that and I wasn't working anymore.
Yeah.
I feel like that's when I really took my time with developing the recipes. And I almost started, I was focusing on like kind of fancier recipes and recipes that required, you know, like a ton of ingredients and we're just taking way too long. I think I was trying to do something like fancy.
Right.
But then what I would always come back to is that the recipes that did the did the best were the simple ones and the recipes that only required like, you know, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8 ingredients.
Yep.
There was like this, I think these like pizza puff pastry bites.
Yeah.
And it was, there were literally 5 ingredients and that recipe always like just killed it. And, you know, and meanwhile, I'm like, I'm trying to make like a, you know, pork shoulder ragu or something, you know?
right.
So I was like, okay, I feel like this is what people want. They want, they want the simpler, easy to follow weeknight recipes. And then I think that's when I moved into the mindset of, you know what? I'm a mom. I work. And so I'm going to put out recipes that other people who have busy schedules have time for.
Yeah.
And I still do the, kind of the more, I don't want to say complicated, but the more time intensive recipes, but I do fewer of those.
Right. I love your, air fryer grilled cheese. What a great idea.
Oh,
I never thought of that.
That was
a product of living out of a small. Yeah, I was gonna say you created something out of, you know, a necessity probably. That's amazing. Well,
I was in a small kitchen, but also that was also a product of, you know, 2020 and quarantine and being home and that was definitely the year that people just wanted super simple, super straightforward. I put like, I think I made a tuna melt one day and I can't tell you how many direct messages I got asking me how I made a tuna melt.
So, you know, what's funny is that I wonder if it was your tuna melt, because in quarantine, I saw a tuna melt and I'm forgetting whose it was. And then my daughter and my son, who both love tuna salad, I made it for their lunch and they were like, "What in the world is this?" And I was like, "It's a tuna melt." Like, yeah, thanks for bringing that back.
Well, it's just, it's funny because I feel like during that time period, I mean, we were A, just like looking for simpler things, but we wanted also like comfort food.
And yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I was definitely going back to the basics, and just putting easy stuff out there, and it was just going bananas. It was going crazy. So,
love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So we have time for a couple more questions. I'd love to ask, maybe you could tell us a few people who've inspired you over the years.
Yeah, well, definitely my parents. Like I said earlier, my mother and my father are great cooks. I mean, not only are they great in the kitchen, but they're just wonderful human beings that I look up to and respect and admire and love. But they, my dad growing up, he was a huge advocate for us expanding our palates and trying new foods. And my dad loves to eat and he just loves food. So we went out to eat a lot. And my dad would always make sure that we would try something new. And so I try to do the same thing with my children. And he also just kind of helped me develop to know how to develop flavor when cooking and to know how to build on that. So my parents, and I think just, whenever I go out to eat and if I have like a fabulous dish at a restaurant, so I want to say like, I'm inspired by foods that I eat in restaurants. And so, and by local chefs.
Yeah.
When I was living in Madison, which is kind of a smaller food community in Madison, Wisconsin, I got to know, a lot of chefs well. And, so I was very inspired by, you know, their dedication to food and, working so closely with local farmers and artisans and, you know, developing these wonderful recipes, using, you know, local ingredients, and just, you know, locally sourced things. And, just seeing these, you know, beautiful creative dishes come out. So yeah, chefs, and I'm always inspired by other food bloggers and other, personalities on social media and, and Food Network and, you know, yeah, all of it.
That's great. And maybe a couple more questions. So in terms of this past year, what would you say you've learned in this challenging year that we've had?
Oh, what have I learned? That's a big question. I'll answer this in two ways. So what I've learned personally, I've learned that, you know, family is very important, and I feel like, you know, in the midst of this pandemic and everything going on, I'm super thankful that it brought my family closer together.
Yeah.
You know, because we were all home and all under the same roof. So I think it taught me the importance of family, and I've always known this, but it's, you know, it's always good just, you know, to be reminded of making sure that you appreciate your loved ones and, you know, tell those people around you, you know, that you love them and all of that. And then what last year taught me, professionally, I think was just to, slow down a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
And to take a step back and to really think about what's important. So with, you know, with COVID and everything that happened last year and is still going on, and even, you know, everything that's going on, you know, right now, within the AAPI community, I think I'm just reminded to always take a step back, just look at everything, and appreciate the things that I know to be true more, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And to also know that I have a voice and to use it.
Yeah.
And to be, you know, more confident in who I am.
I love that. So I guess lastly, kind of building off of that, but with a little bit of a food focus, for anyone listening who maybe has never cooked Korean food, where do you recommend they start? What recipe or recipes on your blog or maybe on another blog or a cookbook you'd recommend? What do you recommend to someone who's wanting to try out cooking Korean food?
I love this question. So what I would recommend for someone who is brand new to Korean food, if you live in an area that has a Korean market or Korean restaurants, and I know that not all of us are dining out right now, so, you know, you can easily do takeout and help support local Korean restaurants. But I would say just start with, if you are a meat eater, start with Korean bulgogi, which is the Korean marinated beef. I feel like bulgogi and rice, and anytime you eat at a Korean restaurant, you will get these small seasoned vegetable dishes, which is called banchan. So you get all these little side dishes, like some seasoned bean sprouts and spinach and potatoes and just all sorts of things. So I would say start by going to a restaurant if you can, order takeout, support the, if you have a small Asian grocery store, Korean grocery store in your area, go out, support them. Don't be scared of it. You know, if you have questions, just ask somebody. And then I feel like another good starter recipe that a lot of people love is bibimbap. mm-hmm. which is just, it literally translates to mixed rice.
Yeah.
And bibimbap, you know, it can be vegetarian. You can have protein in there, like beef or, you know, any type of protein. But again, it's just, it's rice with those seasoned vegetables and a protein, a fried egg on top. And you mix in this super delicious gochujang sauce, which is the hot pepper paste. And it's usually mixed with sesame oil, honey, and like a little bit of vinegar, brown rice vinegar.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites.
Yeah, I love it. And there are so many exciting Korean cookbooks coming out. I think Joanne, the Korean vegan, her yes. cookbook is coming out mm-hmm. In October, I believe.
I'm actually having her on a podcast soon. So I'll be asking her a lot of the same questions.
I love her. Yeah. So, the Korean vegan, I just actually pre-ordered her cookbook today. Eric Kim, who, he's everywhere. And he also writes for the New York Times. He has a cookbook coming out, I think next year.
Okay.
But I think it's going to be called Korean American. I'm not sure, but...
Yeah, I think that's what I read. I think I read that in an article recently.
Yeah, but I'm just so excited to see, you know, like fellow, you know, Korean brothers and sisters like out there just writing these beautiful cookbooks and... what I love most about it is that they are sharing their stories.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I do this with my blog too. You know, we have the opportunity to share a little bit of our heritage and our history and our stories with our families and our parents and bring you into the world, you know, that we grew up in with food.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, thanks for doing that. And thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today, Alice. It was great catching up.
Thank you so much. I had so much fun.
And thanks for listening. To learn more about the food and drink discovery platform that is the FeedFeed, head to thefeedfeed.com. Be sure and follow us on Instagram at thefeedfeed. And don't forget to follow Alice as well. She's over on Hip Foodie Mom 1. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. The FeedFeed is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradio.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from our listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.